Welcome to You Don't Even Like This Band, a podcast about bands you probably don't even like.
We hope you don't know this one.
With your hosts, Adam Todd Brown, Andy Sell, and Travis Clark.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Steve Earle season of Unpops Music, aka Copperhead Pod, aka Washington Podcast Serenade, aka Terrapod. So you want to be a podcaster? You know, the list goes on and on. I'm Adam Todd Brown. Who else is here? You're not going to say your names? You're just going to raise hands? Okay.
I wanted Travis. I was like, if Travis wants to go first, this is his opportunity. I live in Minnesota. This is what I do now. I have to be polite and defer to others.
I've been to Minnesota. It's not that polite. Big misconception about the Midwest. Anyway, that's Andy Sell.
Hi, I'm Andy. I'm sorry. It's a day.
I even pointed to you like, go ahead, Andy. And then you just sat there and froze and looked at me like I was.
I didn't see you. You weren't in my window. The window was still on.
I know. I'm not the gym where I work out where Andy's face would be plastered while I'd be running on the elliptical. And he'd just be sitting there staring at me, sending me weird texts.
That does sound like a lot of fun.
I miss us.
Same. Hey, that was Travis fucking Clark talking.
That's me!
And we are your hosts. And as promised, we're doing an episode about Steve Earle's many, many, many wives. And I got halfway through researching this, and I realized we are doing two episodes about Steve Earle's wife, because otherwise this episode would be about 2 hours long.
And I also feel that, not to tip the hat too much, but revisiting the subject of a wife is something Steve Earle would do.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah, before we dive into it, what's everyone's impression of Steve Earle's relationship history? Definitely paints him in a little different picture than we have so far.
Yeah, I feel like some people are going to maybe change their minds about him during this episode.
I tend to do, like to look at this through the lens of my life, and I go, you know, I'm not so bad. I'm all right.
Yeah.
I've done okay.
Yeah. I might have been the problem in some relationships, but wow.
Might have.
Wow. Have I never been this problem?
Yeah. He's a whole handful to be in a relationship with. And, we're going to talk about it. He's been married, as we've mentioned before, 7 times.
That we know of.
To 6 different women. There is a woman who pops up at the end of this book who it seemed like he was on his way to marrying, but no idea what happened to her.
He does that. There's a couple times where he pump fakes here where you think, up, they're going to marry. And then, whoa, what? No, I didn't see that. Okay. Somebody else. It's like when they are writing a season of TV to go a certain way. And then at the end, the actor says something shitty and they got a whoops. Okay. They're not going to be in the next season, I guess.
The first time he got married, 1974, he was 19 years old at the time. That's too early.
See, but if you start heroin at 12, I think getting married at 19, just that kind of you're on an accelerated course at that point.
Yeah. He was essentially in his 40s by the time he turned 19. He had a whole lot of history behind him.
Yeah. It's the same year Texas Chainsaw Massacre came out.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I wasn't even born by the time Steve Earle got married the first time.
I was. So you're welcome. I helped.
No, there you go.
Yeah.
Helped how? You got what?
I just think having my energy in the world helped. You know, I was in Georgia more than Texas, but it's not that far.
Puts everyone in a loving mood, having Travis Clark around.
Travis, are you an Infinity Stone?
Kinda.
What are you talking about?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, you didn't know that about me? That's why, yeah.
Now I want to see Steve Earle with the gauntlet and little baby Travis is stuck in one of those pockets.
Yeah, my power is depression. I ruin everything.
Yeah, discordance. Relationship discordance. That's your stone.
There it is.
So the woman he married, her name was Sandra Henderson. If you can believe it, her family was vehemently opposed to them getting married. I don't know why. But
prescient of them.
To the guy who dropped out of school at 12 doing heroin, who said I just want to be a musician. They think that would be a bad marriage.
Weird.
He also doesn't bathe much.
Yeah, he just looks like a dirty hippie around this time as compared to now when he just looks like a
slightly more clean hippie,
dirty Marxist. I don't know. The good news, though, is her family was wealthy. So the night before the wedding, Sandy Henderson's father offered Steve Earle $5,000 to skip town and never return. I only thought that happened in movies.
I was going
to
say, already this is movie shit. Like, we're already, it's a movie. What the fuck? This doesn't, and it's crazy because it's like, we have to do these episodes separately from the rest of the chronology of Steve Earle's career. And I feel like if someone were to make a biographical movie about him, it would have to be done the same way. There'd have to be one movie that's like, okay, this is his marriage or his music career and all of, and the addiction and everything. And then a separate companion movie that's like, all right, now here's all the marriages. And because it starts out already just like, what, high drama.
It would be a franchise. If there was a movie about Steve Earle, it would have to be like four or five movies.
Oh my God. It'd be a new version of The Hangover, but it's Steve Earle just waking up in a new marriage and a new career each time.
Yeah. Last one, he's in space. Yeah. It's like, that didn't happen in Steve Earle's life. Stop
you never
it.
Know. It might. We could have an astronaut Steve Earle. There's still time.
Astro Steve.
Well, I just thought maybe I needed to look and see what's outside this world for a while.
So despite this offer, the couple still gets married. June 1974, mostly to spite Sandy's father, Steve promptly decides to move the couple way across Texas to a town called Cibolo, which is near San Antonio. Anyone ever been?
I've been to Pflugerville. I have not been to Cibolo.
I've only been to Texas, not counting like layovers and airports. I've literally been to that entire state once, and it was to San Antonio, but I don't think I've been to this place.
I've been to Dallas. The best show of my life I did in Dallas on Halloween night, and Dallas was fun. They got good food. I have friends down there. I wouldn't live there. I toyed with the idea of moving to Texas, and then almost immediately Texas started becoming aggressively Texas. And I was like, no, that's not where I need to be.
I had a bunch of friends who, like, you know, a decade or so ago were like, no, you got to come to Austin. It's great. Or like Denton, even. It's great. It's cool. It's artsy and everything. And I'm like, you know, that town might be great, but I feel like it's surrounded by bullshit and I couldn't do it. And wow, just watching what's happened to Austin, even, I'm like, yep, sure.
But Texas is a country. Like, it's 12 hours to get through the state, you know, like it's enormous. So like, yeah, I'm sure there are parts of Texas that are great, surrounded by a lot of other parts of Texas that probably, for more progressive leaning people, not the most friendly area.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I love about Austin, and love is probably the wrong word to use, but there's this thing where people are getting really mad that they're being priced out of the area now because it's becoming such a popular place to live. And the thing is, I would sympathize if Austin wasn't one of two cities in America that does not have a law in place that says when you build a housing development, you have to set some of that aside for affordable housing. Austin and Portland both were like, no. We don't want poor people living in our hipster neighborhoods. We're slightly above poor and we want to keep them out. And now it's like, careful what you wish for. Now you can't afford to be there. So they moved to San Antonio, basically. And Steve Earle, he's playing gigs on the weekends at a place called the Roth Baron. He's paid $25 plus free food with tips. He made around $200 per gig. That's not bad for 1974 money.
That's not bad for 2021 money.
Yeah, that's more than you get paid as a PA for your day rate on any production.
Yeah, I know comedians who would throw their family from a moving car if it meant they got paid $200 per gig.
Yeah, that's and it's in 74 money. I mean, that's like you're a millionaire.
Yeah,
I know comedians who would just throw their family from a car. You wouldn't even have to pay them. They're just like, I'm just a nightmare to be around.
Yeah, several. I know several.
Yeah.
It's especially good money when you take into account the house they were living in, $50 a month rent. That's insane.
I'm going to guess that Cibolo, is that the name of the town?
Mm-hmm.
maybe not the highest end in terms of rent, but two, probably not the nicest house there for $50 a month.
No, I'm assuming not. But I mean, they were a young couple. You gotta start somewhere.
It is still though, like, you know, boomers, you have this thing, this like cultural thing where it's like a story where like they always will be like, hey, remember, I don't know if your parents did this, but where it's like, they always remember that shitty apartment we lived in when we were first getting together, you know? And it's always like, well, that's all I've ever lived in. And I'm 41 now.
Yeah.
and they were probably better apartments than I've lived in. And for $50 a month. Yeah. I don't ever want to hear a boomer complain about anything ever.
When my parents would say, remember that shitty apartment we got when we all first got together? I was like, oh, you mean the place I grew up? Yes, I remember that. Very much remember that place.
If you can believe it, this was a very brief marriage. Steve Earle is a lot less good at marriage than he is at music, which people probably should have caught on to by now. Just hearing the 7 marriages to 6 women thing.
Well, you know, you got to practice.
Look, Adam, you can quote stats all day, but it's really in the intangibles. Like, if you really want to know...
Facts don't care about your feelings.
If you really want to know, like, you could give me a win-loss ratio, but you got to look at the specifics.
Are we trying to moneyball his marriages?
I think he was. He is no Billy Bean, that's for sure. So the problems in this marriage start when Sandy's sister moved to Mexico and the family planned a trip to go down and help her get settled, and they did not invite Steve.
Again, these folks are prescient. They know maybe we shouldn't bring him here with us to this, like...
Yeah, as we'll find later in this episode, Steve Earle in Mexico is a bad, bad, bad idea. Very bad idea.
Yeah, I feel like he shouldn't be allowed there.
So seriously, not getting invited to Mexico is when he was like, well, I'm out. Like, that was all it took?
Yeah, while she was gone, he found a replacement for his gigs at the Roth Baron, left behind $50 to pay rent, and then hitchhiked to Nashville without even leaving a note for her to say where he had went. That said, he only stayed in Nashville for 10 days and came back after she returned from Mexico, at which point he informed her he was moving to Nashville.
First of all, these read like lyrics to one of his songs. Second of all, is it the most respectful way to break up with someone? No, but at 19, pretty cool way to break up with somebody, just leaving rent money and being like, well, I'm out, you know, and you're not going to know. I kind of like it.
Well, but then like, he defeats the purpose of that exit by coming back.
Well, sure, because I think he realized like he didn't get to see the reaction. You want the reaction.
Yeah. Do you think you asked her to dramatize it, to like reenact it for him?
I think he went, I liked it, but could you try it again? Let's just be a little more surprised. You know, like, yeah.
Look, I don't want to note you to death, but if you could just start small and then, you know, give it some place to go. That's all. You're giving me a lot of wow up front, but give it somewhere to go.
Sandy, we're going to have you mic'd up, but we're going to open the door like you don't know I'm coming. You just have to act like you don't know. Yeah.
Look, when you read the note about me leaving you, try to find a parallel so that you can really internalize it. Like, I don't know, when I left you and left you a note.
And if you could just say he left me $50 for rent and a note, but didn't say where he went, it'll be a lyric.
Now, I should clarify, he did eventually bring Sandy out to Nashville with him.
Ah.
So he didn't necessarily break up with her when he moved to Nashville, but he also definitely broke up with her when he moved to Nashville. Because he gets there, and this is the point where he falls in with Guy Clark and Towns Van Zandt, so he's spending all this time with them. That's his main focus, is music and drugs. Obviously, he was very focused on drugs. Here's a quote. We drank a lot. I drank a lot. And we took speed because it was cheap and it allowed us to stay awake and drink longer. You could stay awake for 2 or 3 days at a time. And cocaine was beginning to happen, but with us, it was still pretty democratic and nobody could really afford it that we really knew directly. What? I was he on cocaine when he said that? Because that sentence makes very little sense.
Here's how I interpreted it. Everything else was communist. You know, it was the speed, the drink, like it was all communal. Everyone could have that. If you had cocaine, well, that's a little more democratic. You got to pay for it. It's free hand of the market. So people weren't sharing that. That's how I took it.
That makes sense. Sandy was generally not involved in any of this and just stayed home by herself. And Steve spent most of his time, like I said, hanging out with his new country music friends. And that's when he wasn't on the road himself. Speaking of the road, that's where he met a woman named Cynthia Dunn.
Oh, it's just somebody in passing. Just a friend, I'm sure. Nobody worth really getting upset about.
You know, if this were a movie, like a fictional movie, and you gave me a character named whose last name was Dunn for this, I would be like, that's too on the nose, man. That's too, I get it. You're from the Iowa workshop or whatever. Like, this is too much.
I don't know. And also, too, maybe it's just me and my past experiences, but the name Cynthia is always alluring and trouble.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't think I've ever dated a Cynthia.
I haven't either, but I've encountered them.
He also has a couple that have like the two-part names where it's something Anne, and I feel like that if your middle name's Anne, if her middle name is Anne, and she goes by a name and Anne, it's like, yeah, it's probably trouble.
Yeah, keep Steve Earle away from women with Anne in their name.
Yeah,
because he runs up against a couple. This is a quote about the time he met Cynthia Dunn. I was balancing on a wall about 12 feet above 17th Avenue in front of this house. I had a dispenser of nitrous oxide in one hand and a bottle of tequila with 16 hits of LSD dissolved in it in the other, and a joint about a foot long in my mouth. And everybody was sort of out there cheering me on. And Cynthia got out of this cab and looked up, and it was love at first sight. And she could match me hit for hit and drink for drink and suck the chrome off a trailer hitch. And I was 21 years old. How the hell was I supposed to know it wasn't love?
Okay, so this is your trailer. This is the teaser trailer for the movie.
No, it's...
Because how do you not see this scene and go, oh yeah, of course it's love at first sight. This is, you know,
in the world where this is the trailer, you have a Steve Earle character 12 feet in the air with this giant joint, this bag of LSD tequila or bottle of LSD tequila and nitrous oxide. And you do the record scratch and you go, you're probably wondering how I got here. Then he does this little monologue.
There does need to be a Steve Earle movie.
Absolutely.
But it should be a rom-com. That. It should be a rom-com about a guy who has all of these issues and seven marriages. I think that would be amazing.
Bad luck, Chuck.
I also like to think that the foot long bad luck, Chuck.
It's a reboot.
took me a minute.
Reboot of the Dane Cook movie.
I like to think that the fact that the joint is a foot long is not hyperbole. That there's literally 12 inches of joint sticking out of his mouth.
And that's what's great is that if this was anybody else, you'd be like, okay, sure, you were 12 feet in the air and you had a tequila with 16 shots and a foot long.
Yeah.
No, you're like Steve Earle. You're like, you're probably downplaying it. You know, it was...
There is actually a point in the book, I don't think I put it in the notes anywhere, where he's hanging out with someone and the guy pulls out a joint. And Steve Earle, like fucking Crocodile Dundee, goes, you think that's a joint? I'll show you a joint. And he puts six rolling papers together in a line and rolls a joint with that. So this probably was a joint that was a foot long, which that's impressive.
Oh, my God. I hope it's called like the Subway.
He really is just like a cartoon. It's like he's got the marriages of Henry VIII or Larry King, the drug history of everyone that's ever had a drug history, like the gun stuff, the just the wild living stuff. It's like Bukowski and Burroughs and like Hunter S. Thompson, but still alive.
Still alive, yeah.
And just like the extreme version of all of it without being super harmful. Like he's never killed anyone, you know?
That we know of.
Okay, he's definitely killed someone.
Probably. So with that, upon meeting Cynthia Dunn, his marriage to Sandy Henderson is essentially over. She goes back home in the summer of 1976, and Steve married Cynthia Dunn shortly thereafter. They knew each other for 9 months before getting married, and as that last quote should imply, their marriage was a pretty wild one.
Oh, the thing where he still openly says she could suck the chrome off a trailer hitch.
Yeah, the part where he says, how was I supposed to know it wasn't love? Probably when you describe the love of your life as being able to suck the chrome off a trailer hitch. I don't know if a lot of women want to be described that way. It sounds like Cynthia Dunn might have, though. She was a character.
Yeah. I mean, look, and I want to be sex positive and everything, but...
I took it as maybe she was a bit of a metal worker. You know, like she could really, if you were stripping down something, she could really help out with that.
It would be funny if that's what he meant. This is a quote from him about their marriage. God, you talk about a nightmare. We fought. I mean, fist fights occasionally. I tried to run her over in my truck in the middle of the parking lot next to the Gold Rush one time. Chased her around till I finally hit someone else's car. Then I gave up. That's a bad look.
That is, but what a story. I love the story of I'm trying to run down my partner and I hit someone else's car and I just went, good enough. Like, that's crazy. Also, I've never been to Tennessee. Is it always like this?
It seems like it.
I went to Nashville once. I didn't see anything like this. Or in Memphis too. And I didn't experience anything quite like this.
So. I mean, all of these stories, when I think of Tennessee, I think of like, you know, Americana and like, you know, community and stuff. Yeah. And then all of these stories are like, good God, man.
What's really fun is that their worst fight happens before they even get married. Cynthia was with Steve the night he played a bar that was also running a 50-cent tequila shot promotion. Which that's just, no matter who's in the room, that's a bad idea.
That's never, sure. That's no story that starts with that ends well. This is 10-cent beer night shit. It's like, don't, right. This is not a good call.
And tequila should be illegal. Like there is no room in the world for alcohol that is also a stimulant. It's the only one. It's the only alcohol that is a stimulant.
Anytime you have to market it with a dead bug inside, it's bad.
It's a stimulant and a hallucinogen if Steve Earle's got it in his hands, because then there's also 16 hits of acid.
That's a lot of acid.
I also want to know, is that the 50 cents of tequila we're getting? Is it the Steve Earle special we're getting?
The Steve Earle special. You want to talk to the bug inside the bottle?
So they're both hammered on 50 cent tequila shots. And Cynthia gets so drunk, she ends up just disappearing with some biker and goes out in the parking lot to make out with him. Steve Earle finds them, at which point he, quote, shot up the whole parking lot. The only reason I didn't kill him, her, and somebody else is I couldn't hit anything. I was just too drunk. I was really lucky. I did manage to murder a Toyota Tercel that I'm pretty sure never ran again because I hit it 3 times in the bonnet. Pow, pow, pow. It was the closest car to the Volkswagen. They were making out in a Volkswagen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. There, but for the grace of God, go any of us. Yeah, who no, hasn't wanted to shoot up a parking lot in a fight with our significant other?
Who hasn't fired a pistol at their partner in a parking lot and destroyed a car and then was so dissociated from it that they joked about it later?
I suppose I'm supposed to say, oh, yeah, who could do that? But, I might have done things like that.
A gun? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Who hasn't? Who hasn't really? Yeah.
Not exactly that, but I might have done something similar as dangerous. Yeah.
Did you shoot up a copy of your new album because you didn't like the sequencing?
No, I've never done that. I'm no Steve Earle, but, you know, I might have done some tributes in the past, not knowing I was doing a tribute act.
But I'm no Steve Earle. But I might have almost killed a guy if I had the driver's license to go do it.
Right.
I do think that a lot of this might be him, like, you know, I have to think, no matter, even if he was, well, who knows, maybe it was just he was so drunk he couldn't hit anything, but.
But this is pre-marriage, right? Is this like the proposal? Is it 3 shots? It's like, pow, 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 do you? Do you want to get married?
Yeah, this is pre-marriage. Naturally, they still go on to get married. The marriage took place at a bar in the Nashville airport because Steve had to catch a flight. You can just get married when you get back?
No, we have to do this thing before we've been together for 5 months. I have a reputation.
Also, too, it's almost treating it like paperwork. You're like, let's just get it done before I go. I don't want to deal with it when I come back.
Yeah, it's like doing the dishes before you leave. You don't want to come home to dirty dishes. You just get all that shit out of the way.
I don't want to come home unmarried to somebody who makes out with bikers in the back of a Volkswagen. Let's just get married at the airport.
How am I going to make sure she can't testify against me when I shoot at her?
So at one point, these two get kicked out of the place they're living, if you can believe that. And they decide briefly to move to a literal cabin in the woods that has no electricity or plumbing. But while doing that, while getting that place set up, they just up and decide to move to Mexico.
Well, because, yeah, he's got to go find Sandra again. Or Sandra's sister, I should say.
If anything's going to improve a rocky relationship, it's moving to Mexico with not a lot of money.
I also just love, like, apparently money is a bit of a problem at the time, and you're living in a cabin in the middle of nowhere, and you're like, we should go to Mexico. Like, that'll fix it. That's what's missing from this marital bliss.
We need to relocate to another country where I assume neither of them speak the language. And
No, I'm sure they don't. And so they get to Mexico, and they ask about where they can stay for cheap. And I'm assuming the answer was anywhere. Like, you're in Mexico. Just avoid resorts and you can stay anywhere cheap, probably.
Yeah. That's the thing also. Do you know where in Mexico they went? Because Mexico, I mean, it's big. It's a country. There's wildly different regions.
I'm going to guess there wasn't a lot of planning, Andy. I'm going to guess they just kind of ran for the border and just...
So probably somewhere near the border. Yeah.
It was not near the border, because at one point when Steve moves there, he tells the landlord of the place. I should mention, they first go to a hotel that they're directed to when they ask about cheap accommodations. And at one point, Steve Earle wakes up in that room and Cynthia says, "We have to go." And he's like, "We just got there." And she's like, "Look around." And he looks around and they had destroyed everything breakable in the room. And someone who worked at the hotel came in, and by that point, Steve Earle was passed out drunk, and he said, "You two have to leave when he wakes up." So they get kicked out of there, and the reason I know they weren't close to the border, they move in with some woman has like a room for rent, and Steve says he has a $600 check coming, which he did from, he had all those music publishing deals and things, and this check is not coming. It's not coming. It's not coming. He finally realizes he had all his mail sent to someone in the United States. So they have to travel. I think it was either 7 hours or 700 miles to the border.
Oh, God.
So someone could bring them this check. So they were deep in Mexico. It wasn't just like across the border. So, yeah, the time these two spend in Mexico is absolutely insane. They're high the whole time. They're broke the whole time. And this is one of those spots in the book, Hardcore Troubadour, that I don't want to give away completely. Just know that their time in Mexico at one point involves Steve Earle almost getting mauled to death inside a bullfighting ring. So it's that kind of stories.
He's Bugs Bunny. Like, it's just fucking insane.
He's Bugs Bunny meets Hemingway, you know? Like, he's just this... He's larger than life. And again, if it was anybody else, I'd be like, okay, what really happened? Did you go to a bullfight and like it was hot that day and so you made it more crazy? But I don't doubt any of these stories.
No, but it just all seems so crazy. Like, he never stays anywhere for long. He's always bouncing back between relationships and between cities and between, you know, not drinking and doing drugs and then doing all of the drugs.
Just all of them.
But with, like, you know, and hanging out in, you know, crack houses and places and then, like, getting deals with major labels. Like, what the I can't. Okay, I'm sorry. I just stop. I swear at some point I'll stop being vocally shocked by all of this.
But I'm thinking, but you bring up an interesting point, Andy. Like, if you gave me a tequila bottle with 16 hits of acid in it, and I drank that one night, I'm done for like a long ass time.
Yeah, and that's your most interesting story. story. Like, right. That's going to be, that's, oh, this one night I did this. For Steve Earle, that's yesterday.
Yeah, for Steve Earle.
And it's Tuesday.
And he was balancing on a wall and had a 9-foot joint and had a nitrous oxide tank on his back.
Also, he's going to shoot at this woman this way and try to hit her with a car on 2 different occasions. Oh, and they're going to go to Mexico. And at some point, he's going to almost get killed by a fucking bull. What?
Yeah, he almost got killed by a bull, among other adventures in Mexico. These
that's
two.
That's the thing. It's always among other adventures with this guy.
Yeah, that's one of the things. As far as this relationship goes, Steve Earle was a problem, but it seems like Cynthia Dunn was a little bit of a problem too.
Yeah.
And it seems like they just kind of fed off each other's not great energy.
I kind of want to meet her.
Yeah, I agree. I did try and look some of these women up, just like Google them, and you like there's not even pictures of most of them.
Not even mugshots? I feel like for sure somebody's got
probably
like,
yeah, I should check public records. I would have found stuff. So their whole time in Mexico is crazy. He told the author of the Hardcore Troubadour book that he, quote, doesn't remember anything that happened after 6 p.m. from 1977 to 1979, which I believe that.
That's the only reason he didn't become a punk artist.
Yes.
It's because he just wasn't conscious for the birth of punk rock.
It's also great, too, that his Lost Weekend is 2 years long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lost Weekend number one is 2 years long, because there's that 4-year one that happens in the 90s also.
He's like a cicada. It's every 17 years.
He just comes out with tequila, LSD, speed, and guns. And you're like, well, this is going to be a weird summer, guys. You better watch out.
I want to go to the building in Mexico where there's just a Steve Earle husk stuck to a wall.
Uh-oh, Steve saw the shadow of his foot-long joint. We got 6 more weeks of Steve Earle this year.
Are we sure the Mothman isn't just Steve Earle rolling around?
Oh my god, that's a good... And I mean, he's also Sasquatch, probably.
Probably.
So at one point, they moved to Austin so Steve can get involved in the music scene there, but that also didn't work out. Because, quote, it was too close to the border and the dope was too cheap and the girls were too pretty. That sounds like a problem for him.
This is my thing about Mexico. He shouldn't even be near it. Like, he has to be 2 states away, probably, at least.
Maybe it's because his songs are so personal, but all of these quotes, it's like, are you quoting him or are you quoting a song? Because that could easily be one of his lyrics.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I know it sounds like he was really obsessed with guns up to this point. But no, this is the point where he really gets obsessed with guns when he's living in Mexico. Before that, he just always had one around in case he needed to, like, shoot up his girlfriend's car or a copy of his most recent album.
Sure.
This is when he writes The Devil's Right Hand. So some good does come from this because that song fucking
hell
rules.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Also, Cynthia eventually confiscated all the guns after Steve and friends decided to remove the tires from their cars, roll them down a hill, and shoot at them to see if they could hit the tires, which caused several bullets to ricochet into the trailer that Steve and Cynthia were staying in.
So we talk about how he's already kind of he's still a child, too. Like, this is an idea a six-year-old would have. He has no impulse control.
No, and this is something that very much is something I have done in the past. Not the tire part, but you're like, let's just take guns and go shoot at stuff. And you're like, they're not toys, you fucking moron.
I've done that, yeah. It's
yeah, I mean, I think just when it starts threatening your safety, that's when you got to pull the guns.
I mean, look, I've shot guns in places that I was like, I don't think I was supposed to have done that. I'm glad I didn't hurt anybody. I never thought, let's shoot at rubber. What could possibly go wrong?
Let's shoot at moving rubber that has a big hole in the middle of it. Also, probably not sober. Good on Cynthia. I mean, considering some of the stuff that they'd been through together, it's sort of like, I bet Cynthia's got just as bad judgment as him. But no, she saw it's time to take the guns away.
Oh, she's got pretty bad judgment. She just didn't want to get shot.
Yeah, fair.
She just had a good survival mechanism in place.
This is how crazy Steve Earle's story is, people listening at home. During this time, he actually gets shot in the chest in a bar fight, and it's maybe a paragraph in the book at best. Because he was like, it was a 22. It broke some ribs, but I was fine. And he was hitting on someone's girlfriend at a bar. And the guy shot him in the chest. And Steve Earle survived. He is unbreakable.
Yeah.
Again, you put me in this situation. I get shot with a 22. I'm changing my whole life after that.
I never shut up about it. That's the thing. It's one paragraph in his book. I get shot one time. That's my story that I have every time. If it's too cold outside, I'm going to be like, man, it's too cold. It makes my bullet wound act up.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm never shutting up about it.
Yeah. And I can't go see that war movie with you because I don't know if you know this, but I was shot and it's a trip. I can't be around it.
Every time I go into a McDonald's, it's like, do you do free fries for people who have been, I don't know, shot in the chest one time?
I can't watch fireworks because I don't know if you know this. I was shot one time for it was just a 22. It broke some ribs, but it's the boom. It's the pop. I can't. It's a real thing.
None of that for Steve Earle.
No.
Unfazed by being shot in the chest.
No, for him, he's just like, damn, nicked it. All right, I'll be okay.
Who's got the cocaine?
So Cynthia really loved cocaine, really, really loved it.
Oh, that's who has it.
And that starts to rub off on Steve. He's now doing more cocaine than usual, which is saying a whole lot. And it gets to him to the point that he has a series of panic attacks on stage. And that culminates in him literally being unable to perform live for a couple of years.
And man.
In response to that, he quit doing drugs and quit drinking for a while. And as you would expect, that is what fractured their relationship because Cynthia was having no part of not drinking or taking drugs. Also, on account of his new straight edge lifestyle, she starts cheating on him with various cocaine dealers in the Nashville area where they eventually end up living again. At one point, he comes home and finds her in bed with one of those cocaine dealers. This is a quote. It was the only time I called my dad and had him send me a plane ticket. I went home for Christmas.
Which is, wow, is that not how I saw that going? Like, everything we've seen about Steve Earle up to this point, where it's like he walks in on them together, and you're like, oh, there's four bodies now. There's four bodies after. That's how this story ends. And I don't know who the fourth is, but they got pulled into it somehow. And it's like, no, he was sober. This is the thing. He was sober and not doing drugs. And it's like, this is what's mind-blowing to me about his whole story. It's like, this is a near miss. This is a near fucking miss just because he was sober at the time. And it's like, how does he go back to it after, you know, like.
I don't know. The more we talk about Nashville, the more I'm like, why don't they reboot Justified and put it in Nashville? Like, there's cocaine dealers, there's organized crime, there's violence. Like, I want to see a show about that Nashville.
Yeah, as opposed to the ABC hit series Nashville, which I did watch for a couple seasons, but come on, no. I bet Steve Earle was on that at some point.
Probably. Was he unjustified? I can't remember.
No.
He had to have been unjustified, right?
He wasn't. No.
He can only do acting roles that require someone who sounds like Steve Earle. He has said that on many occasions. He can't do any acting if the character doesn't sound exactly like
him.
And
I think they already had Dan Brown, who was doing a pretty good Steve Earle at the time, so I don't think they used him.
But in his defense, you could say the exact same thing about Tom Cruise. When's the last time you heard that guy doing an accent?
Can we have
I'd
Tom
like
Cruise?
To see Tom Cruise play Steve Earle.
I
in
was
the
just going to say, yeah. Oh my God. And let's make it a Mission Impossible. Like, Steve Earle has to stay sober in the 70s.
That is impossible.
I know.
My mission, should I choose to accept it, is stay off this cocaine and leave that Cynthia alone. Let's see if I can do it.
So he falls into a super deep depression around this time, if you can believe it. That was Christmas of 1978. He spends a lot of 1979 at a Nashville bar called The Villager, where he reconnects with an old friend named Carol Ann Hunter.
Uh-oh, there's an Ann in there. There's a hyphen Ann in there.
Big problem. Trouble. This is a quote from her. I liked him. My God, I thought he was cute. But I was afraid of guys like him. They would come running into your life, take over, and just dump you. And I didn't know Steve that well. I just knew that he and Cynthia were having trouble. I did not want to get caught up in that. That said, as soon as he gets divorced from Cynthia, he and Carol Ann get an apartment together and were married a little over a year later in 1981.
God, she needed to hold on to that thought.
Yeah.
Because she was right. Like, this is the thing. It's so, and it keeps coming up with people that, like, know better. They know better.
The funniest thing about his pattern is everything else is impulsive, but he'll wait 9 months to a year to get married. Like, he'll kind of actually court someone before marrying them. He won't just be like, you seem cool, let's get married tonight. Like, he'll wait.
Well, that's because he's usually already married when he meets these women. For legal reasons, he has to wait nine months.
We got to wait at least another year for the annulment to go through.
So they married in 1981. Carol Ann got pregnant the same week they were married. Here's a quote. "We weren't in love. We were just looking for someone to have kids with." That's Steve Earle's take on it.
That is, wow. It's just, wow. That's a laser.
Imagine being the kid hearing that. Like, oh, great. Cool.
But is Steve Earle talking about himself in like a dual way? Like sober Steve and drug Steve was looking to have kids with?
I don't know. This is Carol Ann's take on it. "He wanted children, but he was scared. He misbehaved the whole time I was pregnant. He would run around. He was trying to find himself in the middle of the music business. He was playing all sorts of crazy games just to try to fit in. But that child in question, Justin Townes Earle, born January 4th, 1982, who will come up a lot on the final episode of this season. They were poor, but otherwise generally pretty happy. Steve was for sure on the mend, so much so that he was finally able to get back to performing live, at which point I read that and said, uh-oh.
Yeah, it's both the thing that he's really great at and the thing that leads to misbehaving.
This is the point where he records that Black and Pink EP. Have either of you looked up the cover of that album?
Mm-mm.
He looks like someone you do not want to leave your kids around because he will touch them. He's got the most aggressive pedophile mustache on the cover of that Black and Pink EP. Anyway, so he starts really pursuing music around this time. I mean, he had been, but now that once he put that EP out, that's when he starts really focusing on releasing an album. He toured constantly, which Carol actually preferred. To him being home all the time, because this is a crazy quote. "When he was touring, at least she knew where he was. When he was home in Nashville, she would have no idea where he was for days at a time." That's intense.
Yeah.
It also seems to be the opposite of what I would think. Like, in hometown, you're like, well, there's only so many places he can go. When he's on the road, who knows where he ends up?
But nope. Exact opposite.
Opposite.
Once he starts playing bars again, he starts drinking in bars again, of course. He also got reacquainted with prescription drugs like Percocet and Tussionex.
Ah, good to see those old friends again.
Yeah, his old friend the pills. Lots of chaos in this marriage, like the time when Steve got drunk and drove a car through the living room wall of their home.
Well, honey, I'm home.
Yeah, I'm gonna say he shouldn't have a license.
Well, he didn't eventually.
Did you bring me anything from the store?
No, I was just thinking we could do a little remodeling. What if we just kind of knocked out this wall a bit and just really open up the house to the outside?
Okay.
It would have been funny if he Tim Robinson'd it and was like, whose car is this?
Steve Earle in a hot dog suit.
We're all trying to see who came in here on Percocet and crashed this car.
Look, we're all trying to find the guy that shot my record with a 50 cal.
I'm going to rip the fucking head off.
I don't want to be around anymore.
There was also the time they were driving home from one of his gigs, and after a fight over him wanting to go back out and party while she stayed home with the kid, Carol just punched him in the fucking face. This is a quote. "We were not going very fast because we were in the alley behind the San Antonio Taco Company. But she just knocked the living fuck out of me. The doctor thought she detached my retina. I mean, it completely closed my eye. And Carol was 6 foot tall and had 2 or 3 inches of reach on me." I would like to add Steve Earle was driving when she punched him in the face.
Detached his retina.
Yeah.
I like that he starts describing his wife in like boxing stats.
Oh, she's got like 2 or 3 inches on me. It's not a fair fight.
40 wins, 38 by knockout.
One tie and one child by me.
So eventually, as he starts gaining more traction as a musician, the marriage just completely falls apart. It all ended when Carol Ann discovered Steve had wired $5,000 to a strange woman to help her get a business started.
I mean, depends on the business, you know?
You know, that could be a normal woman. When you're sending $5,000 to someone else, that's weird.
Just so when it says she's strange, was that, you know, she was a stranger to them? Or
yes.
Or did she have, like, you know, was she... I got nothing.
Go ahead. Shame her for being weird, Andy. Let's hear it.
Did she have snakes for hair?
Did she have snakes for pets? That's weird enough.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's weird enough on its own. And probably, I'm surprised Steve Earle doesn't have any snakes.
Why don't y'all come on down to Steve Earle's Snakes for Pets? We got snakes, we got lizards, we got pets that are all reptilian. Steve Earle's Snakes for Pets, right off the highway behind the San Antonio Taco Company.
We had some other pets, but the snakes ate them.
I wonder if the San Antonio Taco Company's still open.
I want to go there. I feel like we need to make a pilgrimage there, get whatever tacos they have, and take photos at the spot where Steve Earle got punched so hard by Carol Ann that the doctor thought his retina was detached.
I think we have to do a whole tour of these sites. We got to go stand on the 12-foot wall and drink tequila.
Oh, my God,
we
yes.
got to go get punched in the face in the San Antonio Taco Company. We got to go to some place in Mexico and just break everything.
We got to find out where the woman said, listen to the speech.
Oh, shit. Listen to the speech, man.
Oh, God. I want to bring this up. I failed to make this connection at the time. He was looking for a crackhead in New York. Sorry. He was like, the word crackhead gets thrown around way too cavalierly.
By
you.
He
was looking for a person that knew where to find crack in New York named Popeye, right?
Well, no, he was with Popeye.
He was with Popeye. Okay. And Popeye was the one who knew where to go.
Yes. How are we back on this
There's
story?
There's a guy on a Leftover Crack song named Popeye who has a verse, and I'm wondering if it's the same fucking Popeye. It's
it
probably not, but I make a crack connection and I want to know. Anyway, I'm so sorry.
So San Antonio Taco Company is still open.
Oh.
And for some reason, given that name, I assumed this punching incident happened in San Antonio.
It was in Nashville.
But no. Yeah, it's in Nashville. San Antonio
what?
Taco Company is in Nashville.
Yeah.
This whole time, I thought we were in Texas.
Nashville, Tennessee?
Kennedy like was shot City. In a Lincoln. Lincoln was shot or in a Ford. I don't know.
In a Kennedy. Lincoln was shot in a Kennedy. He was driving a Kennedy. So he and Carol Ann end up getting separated on New Year's Day in 1985, and he immediately starts traveling back and forth to San Antonio to hang out with this other woman. That woman, her name was Michaela Lohman, and she is not who Steve Earle marries next.
What?
Twist?
She's just the woman who ended his marriage with Carol Ann Hunter. And it's more proper to say Steve Earle is the one who ended that marriage. She's just the one he moved on to next. Also, really interesting twist, it's rumored that the entire Guitar Town album is about Michaela Lohman, which that's shitty. You've been married all these times. You have all these women in your life, and you're like, I'm going to write an album about that side piece. Why? Why?
I'm going to guess critical thinking wasn't front of mind for him at this point. It's just kind of, it's all impulse.
Yeah, I don't know.
So yeah, he, by this point, how many marriages are we up to?
Three?
Four?
Three?
One, two, three.
Yeah.
Yeah, three marriages, at least two women not married to that were a thing, right?
And apparently right. some just running around while one of the wives is pregnant.
Yeah. And what's funny is that the next two we're going to talk about are, I'm sorry, I won't spoil it. I'm going to stop.
It's well, just, I mean, we've kind of hit the end of the episode, so we can allude to what we're talking about next, which is more wives. If we yeah. if we kept this going again, this would be a 2.5 hour episode probably. So yeah, we've hit marriage number three. We're not even halfway through, but we are an hour into this recording.
Unbelievable.
And so yeah, on the next episode we're gonna keep plowing through Steve Earle's wives. I don't know if that's
wow.
the way
you should that should have find another out. Way to put that possibly.
Guys, is my life super boring?
Yeah, you've only been married the one time.
I know, and it's
me too.
I've never been married. I can't believe it. I should go and get married. And then, again, I got to get a couple of them out of my system.
Andy, if you were Steve Earle, you'd be on like your fourth or fifth one now.
Yeah, you'd be almost done getting married.
Yeah.
I'd be on my second or third time not doing heroin anymore. I don't know.
Well, that's something.
Yeah. And how many times have you quit heroin, Andy?
Here's the thing. Can you quit if you don't start?
Not really. You know,
I don't know.
If you don't get drafted, you're not playing, you know?
Yeah. You don't have to be great to start, but you do have to start to be great. So...
Yeah, he's like Jordan with the heroin. It's he leaves when you think he's at his prime, and then he comes back to it later, and it's like, wow, it's a whole nother game with him back in.
I tell you what, Andy, either a marriage or a heroin thing, you need to pick up one because you're behind. You gotta raise that level.
Me and Travis have done so much heroin.
Yeah. Well, I was on OxyContin for 8 years. I kicked that. I'm good. I'm married. I have a marriage. I'm at least in the game, Andy. You're just sitting on the sidelines.
I've quit cocaine. Is that something?
I mean, look, we've all quit cocaine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I quit drinking. That's a thing almost.
That's
right?
A thing. That's kinda. A thing. Yeah, that's a thing.
Everyone should quit cocaine. I would just like to put that out there. It's been a tense couple of weeks for LA comedy and cocaine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a tense couple of weeks for a lot of people in general in cocaine.
Yeah.
New York had their problem that's still going on, I guess. The fentanyl, it's a whole thing. I don't want to judge anybody for their, you know, obviously if you're addicted to something, you're addicted to something. You're all going through our own struggles, et cetera. But cocaine's always one of those drugs that, like, even though I did have a period with it, it was always like, I know this is wrong. Like, I know that of the drugs to do and where to support, you know, I mean, not that there is no ethical drug consumption under capitalism. I don't know where I'm going with this.
Don't do cocaine.
Yeah.
Everybody.
People should at least, you know, give it a shot. Give not doing cocaine a shot. Maybe.
Andy's after school special. Here's why drugs are bad financially.
Look, the money from these drugs go to these people, and the money from those drugs go to these other people.
You know what put me off cocaine, like, for my entire life?
What?
Other Len people? Bias dying in 1986.
Wow.
Because if people aren't familiar, Len Bias was a college basketball player who was probably going to be up there with Michael Jordan in terms of talent. Boston Celtics sell the fucking farm to draft him. And on draft night, he overdoses on cocaine and dies.
Yeah.
And I was 9, I think, when that happened. And I remember in one of the articles about it, they said some people's heart just explodes the first time they try cocaine because it has that reaction in some people. And I was like, those aren't dice I'm planning to roll at any point. I did smoke crack at one point, but that's just because I'm way into Steve Earle.
Yeah, you just want to know what that world's like.
Yeah, but powder cocaine? No thanks.
What put me off of cocaine was most of the other people while on cocaine that were around me. I'm like, I don't want to be like that. That sounds like a nightmare.
Here's the thing about cocaine. I before I ever did it, I knew that. I was like, yeah, everybody I know on coke is an asshole. Nothing turns you into an asshole quicker than cocaine. And these people suck. And I've seen, you know, I knew people who OD'd. I knew people who had, you know, I watched them descend. And then I still did it at some point and still was like, hey, this is, I think I like this.
I'd argue that fame can make someone just as much of an asshole as cocaine. I think it hits the same centers.
Fame, money, and cocaine. Those are the three big ones.
Which is the next Steve Earle album we're covering, right? That's Fame, Money, and Cocaine. That's the next album.
Yeah. Money, Fame, Cocaine.
Yeah.
So that's the first half of the episodes about Steve Earle's many, 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 many wives. But until then, do we have anything to plug before we get out of here?
I'd like to plug Andy's Don't Do Drugs seminar that he's doing. It's a Zoom meeting, but he'll just go in and he'll tell you all about what drugs he's done and why you shouldn't do them. It's really entertaining. And
also bring your own drugs.
Also bring your own drugs to do while he does it so he can judge you and tell you why you are actually part of the problem.
Just be safe. That's all I'm saying.
I disagree. I don't think people should be safe.
I don't think people are safe.
No, people are definitely not safe.
I have nothing to plug. I'm sorry.
You have nothing to plug? I don't have anything. Patreon.com/unpops, unpopsnetwork.supercast.tech. I think that's it. That was an upbeat round of plugs to close things out on. Let's get out of here. Travis, say goodbye.
Goodbye. Don't do drugs.
Andy, say goodbye.
Goodbye. Do some drugs, not others, maybe.
Goodbye, everybody. Smoke weed every day. We love you.